But now here's something for us in the program, if we've been around a while, put principle before personality. You know, there's meetings where I don't want to go because there's somebody there that, oh, that's the, and, oh, they gonna share again? You know, Al-Anon helped me with that a lot. And then finally, practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I gotta, you know, I was, the unemployment called me up and this and this, and immediately I started, oh yeah, I was a, and I realized, like, before the end of the conversation, I lied to her. So I had to go immediately. I caught it in the 10th step, thank God. I said, oh, you know something, I really wasn't available at the big deal, so I get a little less money because I told her the truth. But I had to catch it, you know, but my natural instinct is to lie. I'm afraid I'm not going to get what I want, you know. So I have to catch that. To practice, if it's me, very difficult. I pay my taxes now. I got a little scared once over an IRS thing, and I realized, boy, uh-oh. Theoretically, they could prosecute me. So I don't do that. I pay my taxes now. I don't want to. I'm not a big fan of big government. I have a lot of issues. I don't even want to obey the traffic laws, let alone the back wars and all this crap. So, but the point is, I have to render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. I can't be serene if I'm worried I'm going to get audited. It's not about being good or being honest, about being patriotic. It's about what's going to make me eat. It's like the thing with the 9th step. Am I going to eat over this crap? You know, anything that keeps me serene, calm, loving, peaceful means I'll stay away from the next compulsive bite. Anything that makes me agitated, fearful, uptight, hateful, is putting me closer to the next compulsive bite. So I'm either going towards my next binge or going farther away from my last one. It's one of the two. Okay? The 10th step, don't confuse it with the nightly review, which is part of the 11th step. We're going to get to that. But the 10th step, as Dan S. points out in this guy, is all about watching during the day, catching myself when I'm lying to the unemployment or lying to the, you know, I'm catching myself. I'm watching during the day. If I've got the sixth sense, if I'm in the fourth dimension, if I've entered the world of the spirit, this is all language from the book, I'm in the 10th step, I'm watching for my reaction. The great enemies of the compulsive overeater, this is from page 145 of the big book, they are, notice it doesn't say, there's, it's not Sara Lee, McDonald's, Baskin and Robbins, Cheesecake Factory. The greatest enemies of the compulsive overeater are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. And that's what I'm watching for in my 10th step. I'm alert. I'm awake. My spirit's awakened. So I'm alert. I'm in the now. May you find him now. You know, the book tells me where to look for God deep down inside myself, and where I'm, and when I'm going to, I'm in the now. I'm not in the past with resentment. I'm not in the future with fear. I'm in the now, and I'm alert. My spirit is awoke, and I'm watching for the enemies of the compulsive overeater, page 145, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. I think it says resentment, jealousy. Yeah, resentment. Oh, Doug B., who's an old-timer, interesting guy. I don't think he's active in the program anymore, but he came up with something. You know, when I'm calling in with a sponsor, you know, checking in and running something by a sponsor, you know, he does this immediate 10th step inventory. Now, you got to realize that the 10th step is just an amalgam of steps 1 through 9, you know. We've already gone 1 through 9, so we know these spiritual principles of confession and restitution and praying and all this stuff. And now we're keeping it current. And he does this instant check-in thing to in a 10th step, which I thought was brilliant. If a sponsee's calling him up with a, you know, and a lot of drama, and he did this to me, and I said this. He said, hold on. Where were you self? What did you want out of this situation? Well, I wanted him to give me a raise. Where were you self-seeking? What role were you trying to play? Well, I was trying to play like the employee who knew it all, you know, the guy in charge, and you know, he should make me the supervisor. Dishonest. Did you lie? Were you afraid to admit anything? Or admit? Well, I didn't want to admit that I really screwed up the last project. Fear. What were you afraid of? Well, I was afraid Joe would get the promotion. I wouldn't get the promotion. Were you afraid to say something was the truth? Yeah, I was afraid to tell him that I really didn't know the new computer software. So, I mean, this is like a, just, you know, selfish. What you want out of it? Self-seeking? What role were you trying to play? Were you dishonest? Did you lie to yourself? Did you lie to him? Did you not want to admit something to yourself? Like, you know, this is over my head. Maybe I should tell him the truth that I don't think I can do this. Where were you afraid? Well, were you afraid to tell him the truth? Were you afraid to tell him that you screwed it up? You know, were you afraid that whatever, you know? So real quick, check it. Because he doesn't want to waste time on the phone listening to a sponsee's drama, you know. And it's a real quick 10-step check-in. Now, some of the considerations after the 10th step. Do you realize you must go further, and that means more action, and that leads us into the next step? Here's a great realization. Our very lives is X problem. Do I realize that my very life as an X problem eater depends upon my constant thought of others and their needs? The first edition big book I have actually says X alcoholics, and they changed it in later editions because they realized we're never cured of alcoholism. So rather than say an ex-compulsive overeater, you say ex-problem eater, because I'll always be a compulsive overeater my entire life. But it's not a problem today, right? I have my daily reprieve today. Okay, so now we need more action. What action? Steps 11 and 12. Let's talk about 11. So we're going to go to 11:15 and I'll quit, so I don't think I'm going to take a break. So if you guys need a break, by poem. Yes, did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. I actually have to leave to catch my plane, so I was wondering if we could take a quick one and I could get one of
those
from you.
Oh, one of these?
Yeah.
You want to take a quick break, huh? All right.
Or give her the one you've got and get another one.
Yes, and I can give her the one I've got for $6. Yeah, this is pretty good shape, so. You're a smart lady. I forgot to bring him in. That's the problem. I should have brought him in. All right, you come up here. I hope I don't have to refer to it again during this presentation. All right, we're in step 11. Step 11, and, you know, you can read the OA 12 and 12 and the AA 12 and 12. In the nightly review, which I don't do, I do the daily review here.
I have five.
You have five?
Yeah.
Fused. All right. Fused.
Who's my negotiator? Thank you so much.
Yeah, five. All right.
And can I give you a quick hug?
Oh, you want a hug?
Yeah, I want a hug.
That's another dollar. Give me a good buck. Okay.
Thanks, Roy.
All right. None of this goes to me. This is Sherman's thing. I don't publish guides, but I find it useful. The nightly review says I'm going to consider my day, review my day, and see if there's stuff I haven't caught in my 10th step, it's liable to be stay with me. See, if I lied to the employment person, I might be thinking about that at night. See, I didn't catch it in my 10th step, so it filtered through, and now it's bothering me a little bit. Gee, are they going to find out? What am I going to do? What happens if they do? You see, so in the nightly review, it asks us, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Constructively. We don't indulge in morbid reflection. And you know what that means? Oh, I effed up again. I'm like, oh, God, I'm no good. I'm a loser. Constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Once again, the enemies of the compulsive overeater. Do we owe an apology? If I don't, see, when I'm in my 10th step, it says in the 10th step that, we discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we harm someone. Sometimes the person we're discussing it with is the person we harm. I say, you know, I really said that. I didn't mean it. It was an inappropriate remark. I'd like to apologize for that. Is there any way I can make amends for that? You discuss it with the person you harm right there. Clean it up. I'm better at it now than I used to be. I used to tend to screw up during the day, not want to make the apology, not admit it. And then it would bother me at night. I'd think about it, you know, you really owe that guy an apology. I'm better. Progress, not perfection. I'm better at cleaning up immediately. So sometimes the person you discuss it with is your sponsor. Like, do I owe this guy an amend? Or what would, and the sponsor would say, yeah, you owe him an amend. We're going to make it. Or No, you didn't really do anything wrong. He's an asshole, but you got to forgive him. Anyway, okay? So even if he is an asshole, we can't afford to hate him. But if I don't catch it in the 10th step, now I'm in the night. Do I owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? So I better talk to my sponsor in the morning about this, because it's something I didn't catch in my 10th step. It's staying with me. I'm losing sleep over tonight. Were we kind and loving toward all? Wow. Oh, those students are like the torture with cattle prods. What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Say, are you being relieved from the bondage of self by this time? Yes or no? Were we thinking of what we could do for others and what we could pack into the stream of life? Wow. It's not all about me, huh? We must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. This is not about beating up on yourself, okay? For that would diminish our usefulness to others. You know, after making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. We ask the higher power to show us how. But consultation with a sponsor is often wise. You know, we ask God for guidance. I tend to not do, unless something's bothering me. I'm not really much of a night review guy. But if something's bothering me, I'll notice it, because I'm a little bit spiritually awakened by this point in my recovery. I tend to do a morning reflection, thinking, is there anything left over from yesterday that's still with me? Okay, I do it in the morning. Today, I actually got up so late, I set the alarm for 7, that all I had time to do today was read the big book and the for today OA reader and say a few prayers. Now normally, and that was my fault, I should have allowed a little more time, but I was so exhausted. I slept till 7 and I was still a little 5 minutes late anyway. So the point is that normally I will allow myself enough time for a morning ritual. And this is a personal thing. It says there are many good books on meditation, so you can go to meditation class. There's meetings that are devoted, 7:30 a.m. meetings that are devoted to meditation, in AA anyway. There's probably some in OA, if it wouldn't surprise me. Let's see. My own morning rituals, I say the third step prayer. Well, first, the first thing I do is exactly what the book says. On awakening, okay, I ask God to direct my thinking, divorce from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives. Because my natural instinct is, what's in it for me? It's all about me. Do I get mine? How come they got more than me? Why doesn't she love me? Blah, 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 blah. So I have to immediately ask God to direct my thinking, divorce from self-pity, dishonest, self-seeking motives, which is what the book says to do. Because it says my thought life will be on a much higher plane. In other words, as Ebby said to Bill in that recording, we just start helping people with no other motivation than to help people. That's a higher plane of thought than my MO. Okay, and every morning I'm getting a daily reprieve. I want to be tuned into that spiritual awareness. And then I go through the old Oxford group prayer, which I may have included in the packet, which was before we have our third step prayer. They had an old prayer in the Oxford group. It's actually in the big book. It's either in our Southern Friends or, what the hell do I have in here? I bet you I do. I think it's in our Southern Friends, but it's basically, where's my Southern Friend?
Page
208. I got a third edition here, though.
Page
215. Oh, okay, good. About halfway down. Well, that's where you got a fourth edition?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a third edition today. I don't know where's our Southern Friend? It's in the third edition. All right, let me read your big book for a second. This is the old Oxford Group Parentage. Yeah, that's it. And 215 of the fourth edition, the old Oxford Group prayer is, God, here I am to hear all my troubles. I made a mess of things and can't do anything about it. you take me and all my troubles and do anything you want with me. That was before we had our third step prayer. And I just shoot that in because I kind of like that prayer. The idea is, remember it says we're praying only for God's will and the power to carry. That's all we want is God's will. You do anything you want with me, whatever's... Jack Prost, he's dead now with over 53 years of sobriety. He gave his first edition to Lee C., which makes me so jealous of Lee C., but first edition, first printing. He used to say, he'd get up in the morning and say, whatever. And when he go to bed at night, he'd go, enough. You know, this is the old spirit of the Oxford Group prayer. God, here I am, you're all my trouble. I made a mess of things, can't do anything about it. You take me and all my trouble, do anything you want with me. Whatever, you know. So I say the Oxford Group prayer, I say the third step prayer, and I go through the thing in the book, which is back in the third step. I forget what page it's on right now, but God, you're my director, I'm your actor. You're my principal, I'm your agent. You're my father, I'm your son. You're my employer, I'm your worker. You're my matchmaker, I'm your lonely heart. You're the boss, whatever, you know. It says on page 83, when I face indecision during the day, I'm asking God for guidance, intuitive thoughts, or help in making decisions. That's hard. That's like pausing and agitating. You have to practice. Remember, it says we practice these principles. Practice means you're going to get better at it. You know, the more times you go through the steps, the more meditation classes you take, the more, you start with 2 minutes, 1 minute. I can't tell you how many years it took for me to develop a meditation practice. Years. I had trouble with it. I was listening. It's real important, though, the steps are meant to be done in order. And the old Oxford Group practice was, you clear the channels by making the restitution and amends and the confessions. And then your channels are clear and the mind is quiet. So you can receive inspiration and guidance. They said their quiet time, the Oxford Group had what was called the quiet time, which was the basis for our 11th step. They would sit with a pen and a pad. And you were supposed to, you never pray for selfish things, but you pray for people to be helped. And you were going to get inspiration and guidance on how to help people. And, of course, our book says, you know, if we got indecisions during the day, what to do about the landlord, the rent, the school, the this, the that, she doesn't love me, you can ask for guidance and direction on that. You know, but you can't ask that she's with me. God, let me hit the lotto. Make her love me. Make him give me a promotion. We're not allowed to do that. It says we're careful not to pray for selfish things. It's pointing it out. They're not messing around here. It's God's will. You know, you might, she might love you, she might not. You might get the promotion, you might not. I did, because I'm on the cutting edge of the spirituality shit, I pioneered this thing of cross praying with my buddy John Kay. I said, look, John, he's got a band and he wants more. I said, I'll pray that you get more gigs for your band. If you pray, I hit the super lotto. So now we got the cross praying. See, I'm on the cutting edge. Don't kid yourself. But I don't. Somehow I know that that's not right, though. And in the 12-12, Bill says you can't, even though your loved one is sick, you can't ask God, all right, heal him, fix him, don't let him die, don't let him. Because, you know, if God, it's not like we get to decide what happens. You know, miracles happen, shit happens. You know, life, the human condition is we just get the power to stay, not eat over, no matter what happens. You know, it's like there's something in the New Testament about the rain rains on the just and the unjust. You know, you can have a great spiritual program, be absent, be helping others, and all of a sudden somebody hits you in a car and, you know, you're in a wheelchair. Or you develop cancer. Or your loved one dies. We don't get exempted from the rain. You know, rain falls on the just and the unjust. What it means is I'm going to be able to take that experience somehow, transform it, and help other people somehow, and not eat over it, you know, because you don't know what's in store for you. You don't know what's in store for you. And a really nice guy I know sobered up. So what happened? Well, he developed cancer when he was 3 years sober, and he was gone within a year. So that was his sobriety. He sobered up to get cancer. And he was a great guy, a really nice guy. And that, you know, what can we do about that? You know, miracles happen, shit happens. That's the nature of the universe. But I won't have to eat over it. I'll get enough power to match calamity with serenity. It's one of the great promises of the book. Bill Wilson talks about in his story certain trials and rough spots ahead. He's telling you what's coming. That book was written in the height of the Depression. He had no money. He became homeless. Okay? The guys who had the book often, they were out of work. But they didn't have to drink. And you don't have to eat over it. Oh, yeah. If you're in this world of the spirit now and you're praying every day for inspiration and guidance, you're stepped into the world of the spirit, you're in the fourth dimension, you develop the intuitive sixth sense that the book talks about. Intuition, you know. The disease centers in the mind and lies to me. The intuition comes in the gut, you know. You got to go from the head to the heart. And an old speaker named Mike H. down in Florida, when I got on the program, he used to talk about, he doesn't often get clear-cut directions when he's praying on a situation or anything. He doesn't hear some voice saying, yes, call him or do that. But he says he's learned to listen to the great screaming no inside. You know, if you really get in touch with your God consciousness, your intuition, your higher power, the still small voice within, whatever you want to call it, all of a sudden, your spirit's awoke, you're doing something that you know is bad, and you'll feel it, you know. And what the training really is to not let your mind talk you into ignoring your gut. You see, my mind will say, yeah, I can eat that, or that's, you know, that's not too big a portion. I mean, I'll start on the level of food, but it'll transmute to, oh, well, I'd like to go out with her. All right, she said she was bipolar. So what? You know? You know, it's, I mean, the mind will try and overcome the intuition, but if you're developing this, remember, it's practice. And let me tell you about meditation and why it's the 11th step. If I haven't cleaned out my channels through the previous step work, I got too many voices. I'm telling you, if you'd have seen me meditating 7 years on the program, and I was trying to meditate, I bought some tapes, it was like a scene out of The Exorcist. I wish I'd had a video, home video or something. I mean, I'd be sitting there trying to meditate, you know. I swear to God, it was bizarre, you know, because I still had resentments and shit there were. So that's why the 11 steps were the 11th step. It's after step 8 and 9. You know, it's assuming that I've done the inventory, the confession, the restitution. I've cleaned out the channels. I'm a channel for guidance. The mind is getting quiet. My meditation practice today is when I get up in time. Today I didn't. But usually, even when I'm teaching, I get up and I'll try and give myself enough time to get in. I read my four today, I read my two Al-Anon readers, I read my On Awakening in the big book and the nightly review section in the big book. I do my prayers, and I do about 20 minutes just sitting there, put the watch on, I got set for 20 minutes, and I do my prayers, and I say, you know, I say a few prayers for people that maybe I still got resentments, whatever. So I've developed this practice, and I've been pretty good with it. But like today, I missed it because I got up late. I got up at 7, all I had time to do today was read the Four Today Reader, the big book. I think I read a page of the Al-Anon Reader, and I said a few prayers. I said my third step prayer, but I didn't have time for my 20 minutes today. I wanted to, but I just realized I was going to be late. I was late. I was 5 minutes late anyway. So if you have to, and I had to, it means you may have to adjust your schedule to get your morning quiet time in. And you know what Dr. Bob used to say? Meetings are optional. Prayer and meditation is essential. And let me tell you a little story about, first of all, Ann Smith was one of the mothers of AA. She was more into the Oxford group than Bob, and she was the one that was dragging him to meetings. And once that Bob got sober, of course, they all did their quiet time together. They'd read a couple passages from the Bible, and then they'd sit. Let me tell you about the original Oxford group practice here. and why we're all here because of some Al-Anons, let me tell you right now. Henrietta Seigerman, whose husband was the son of the chairman of the Goodyear Rubber Company, but he was a womanizer and maybe been a drunk, I don't know. She was estranged. She was living in a guest house in the Seigerman Estates with the kids. And it was a big crisis in her life, you know. She's estranged from her husband. Divorce is a scandal. She's got kids. The no-good SOB's off there doing what he's doing. And she gets in touch with the Oxford groups. And she likes what they have. She's attracted, and she starts getting active there. And Ann Smith shows up there. I think they had a house party in Akron Harvey Firestone's son got sober. Or no, Harvey Firestone was the son. I forget the name of the father. But anyway, the father was so happy that the Oxford groups got a son sober that he invited the Oxford groups to Akron. They had a house party. Henrietta Seigerman got involved. Ann Smith got involved. So now they're dragging Bob to these Oxford group meetings. But he likes them. He likes Henrietta. He likes these people. It's in his story. He says these people had a certain sense of confidence and assuredness that attracted him, you know, because they could talk about their defects without embarrassment. And he was this guy who was drunk and thinking everybody didn't know he was a drunk, and the whole town knew he was a drunk, and he was down to one hospital that gave him privileges, and the other doctors were trying to cover up for him because they liked him. He was a great guy. Everybody liked him. The nurses liked him. But he was a drunk, and he was blowing it. And so there's Ann Smith's dragging him to Oxford group meetings, and he can't stop drinking. And he's reading everything he can in spiritual literature, and he loves the Oxford group, but he can't stop drinking. So the big thing about the Oxford group, confess your faults to your fellows, it says in the big book. Where do you think they got that from? The Oxford group had this thing about open confession from the floor. What you're supposed to do is you're supposed to confess what's really bothering you, a problem or a sin, you know, a defect. I guess they would call it sin. And if you confessed openly in front of the group, then the whole group would pray for you for help. That help would come, or you'd be able to give up this sin or vice or whatever problem, you know. So they're trying to get Bob to get up openly and confess that he's a drunk. Now, meanwhile, the whole town knows he's a drunk, but he's living in the delusional world. It's like when we're compulsively overeating, right? Kind of the whole world will know it as we start ballooning. And we'll know it first when the pants are getting tight. But if you're naturally, what are the bulimics doing? They're trying to not show it, you know. That's their trick. Or the anorexics are trying to go the other way and starve themselves into it. So he's living in the delusional world that nobody knows he's a drunk. The whole town knows he's a drunk. And he won't confess. So they're dragging him to the meetings, you know. And finally he gets up and says, yeah, I have something to tell the group. I'm a secret drinker. Yeah, finally, you know. So now what happens is the Oxford group starts praying for help for Dr. Bob. You see, this is in the morning meditation that we talk about, the quiet time. They used to call it the quiet time. You don't pray for selfish things, which is what our book says. You're careful not to pray for some. But if you, well, let me read it to you. Yes. Page 87 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, adapted for Overeaters Anonymous. We conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be. We pray for the next indicated action if you've got problems. That we will be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. You can pray to take care of the problems in your life. However, we ask especially for freedom from self-will. And we are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. Careful. Now here comes the next one. This is why it's important in the context of the historical evolution of our program. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that. It doesn't work. You can easily see why. So finally, when Bob confesses that he's a secret drinker, thank you, Bob, visit the whole town, they start praying for help. I don't know if this went on for a week or 2 weeks. I'm not sure. It's 2 weeks. Okay, Harlan's on the history. And so finally, when Bill Wilson shows up in Akron and he goes through this proxy fight and he's losing and he's abandoned with $10 in his pocket, not even enough to pay for his hotel room, and they promise, well, we're going to be back with more lawyers, more money, you stay here, hold the fort. And he doesn't know if it's for real, and he's pacing the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel, and he's thinking of taking a drink because he's lonely. Well, not taking a drink, but I'm going there to have a ginger ale. See, I'm going to go in the Haagen-Dazs and order a Diet Coke. See? And he said, oh, I'll go in the bar and have a ginger ale because I'm lonely. I don't want companionship. He's in a strange town. He doesn't know anybody. And he makes the momentous decision, and he thanks God for restoring the sanity. Remember, in his story, he thanked God for that decision to turn to the telephone directory. And he starts calling people. And I think Reverend Tunks, he called Reverend Tunks, and he was happened to be the most pro-Oxford Group minister in Akron. He picked the right guy for the first call. So Tunks gives him a list of, I don't know, 10, 12 names, whatever it was. And, you know, phone calls are a nickel back in the Depression, so he breaks a dollar bill. Now he's got $9 left to his name, and he starts calling. And every one of them is busy. Okay, every one of them is busy, or they're out of town, or they've got a dinner date, or I'll talk to you Monday, or I can't help you, I don't know what you're talking about, or what, are you crazy? You know. So he finally calls Henrietta Seaman, and he hesitated because he thought it was, you know, Frank Seaman, the wife of the chairman of the board. It was the daughter-in-law. He didn't know that. So he finally calls Henrietta Seaman. Now, you get a strange phone call from out of the blue. Hey, I'm a compulsive overeater, and you know I'm on the spiritual path. You think you could hook me up with another compulsive overeater? Now, if you're a normal person, I mean, you may call 911 or something and say you're getting strange calls. You're certainly, I'm sorry, I don't know what you're talking about. But Henrietta Seaborn has been praying for help for Dr. Bob now for 2 weeks straight in the context of their Oxford Group practice. So when she gets a call from a stranger out of the blue and he says, I'm a rum hound from New York and I'm an Oxford Grouper and I need to talk to another alcoholic to stay sober myself, or another rummy these days, I don't even know if they were using the alcoholic term. She goes, come on over. Okay. I get emotional. It's a very important moment. Henrietta Seaborn is a woman of faith. So when she prays, she expects her prayers to be answered. You say, now you can debate that or not, believe or not believe that your prayers are answered or have it. But she's been praying for help, which is the Oxford Group directions, not for selfish things, help for another. She's been doing it for 2 weeks. She gets a call, and she says, you know what? She told Bill later. She didn't say it on the phone. She said, come on over. I want to talk to you. She told him later that her thought was, this is manna from heaven. So that was a absolutely pivotal moment. If it wasn't for non-alcoholics praying to help in a spiritual path, praying to help alcoholics. I mean, a non-believer or a non, you know, would just say, what do you mean, you're a rum hound and you want to talk to another drunk? I'm sorry, I can't help you. Which is what happened, by the way, in the first 10 calls or so. I mean, I don't know if I would have continued calling. That's how desperately he realized he needed to talk to another drunk to stay sober. How about if you need to get your food sponsored? And you're making 10 outreach calls, and every one of them is a machine, and nobody's answering. Do you have the persistence to keep going? Yes?
Yeah, I've always, for a long time when I first came to the program, I was one of those guys who'd get on my knees and say that morning prayer on page 87. I always had I've always kind of had an ongoing question. Where does the line blur between praying for something that you need help with and selfishness?
Well, you can pray for guidance to take the next right step in handling a problem. But if you got a specific idea of what you should get, in terms of a job, a woman, a promotion, an award, a success. You've already decided what's best for you. Now, if I've got money problems or the landlord is threatening to sue me for $16,000, which he was when I left that faucet running and went off to that Indonesia AM roundup. You guys missed, some of you came in late and missed that story. I didn't pray like, God make the landlord drop his lawsuit, or God let me win the lawsuit, or God let me keep this apartment. I just prayed for the strength to do the next right indicated action, which was talk to a lawyer, write a letter to the landlord, go to a meeting, and I let the situation unfold based on the result. And at one point I thought I was going to keep the apartment. He was going to move me next door, same apartment, renovated, let me, and he double-crossed me. He would never put anything in writing. And I eventually had to leave, and I got another place. But the point is, if you have decided what the outcome should be, you're already praying for selfish things. If you're praying for the power to meet life on life's terms, praying only for knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. That's a different kind of prayer. See? If you got an interview today, you want the job, you can say, God, let me make the best presentation I can. Let me present myself in the right way and let me not piss off the boss, the prospective boss, and let me be a credit to the program. That's fine. But if you say, God, I want this job, please give it to me. You've already decided that that job's the best for you. How do you know it's the best for you? Okay? It might be the thing that'll get you back into the food. You know, how do you know that you should be a big shot? It might, you know, I used to say resentment's the number one offender, success is the number two offender. Because I've seen so many people get a life back, you know, and they get so busy, they got a wife, and they got a job, and they got a career, and they got money, they're the shit, you know, I got it going on. They're managing their own life now so well. They forgot that if it wasn't for the program, page 143 we read yesterday, I have to put my recovery ahead of everything. I'm saying? So you get too busy to take a call from a newcomer, you get too busy. You had a question, didn't you?
You answered it.
Okay. Thank you. So the answer to your question is you don't pray for specific things. It says we're careful not to do that. But you can ask for inspiration and guidance how to do the next right indicated action, how to show up for the interview, how to make a good presentation, how to not lie. So God keep me from telling this guy a bunch of bullshit. So these are some considerations from the 11th step. Can you pause when agitated and ask God for help? This is difficult for me when I'm driving. Do I constantly remind myself that I'm no longer running the show? How do you know that job's the best thing that ever happened to you? It might be the worst. Do I humbly say many times during the day, thy will be done? Do I have a meditation practice? And I go into my... Oh, I misspelled something here. Here we go. Do a little spell check on this. Spiritually. I got an extra eye in there. Do I let God discipline me in the simple way I've just outlined through prayer and meditation? Is the morning practice something that you do? And like I say, you practice, you get better at it if you practice something. It took me years, so don't get discouraged. I claim spiritual progress, not perfection. And I missed my morning meditation today because I was in a hurry to get here. Have I realized the 11 step promises? Now these are the 11 step promises. You want to consider these promises in terms of how's your program doing. We don't do this to beat up on ourselves, but it's an indication to see how's it going for you. Remember what the Oxford group used to say, how's that working for you? You running your own life? You managing? How's that working for you? Oh, you're 400 pounds? How's not having a food sponsor working for you? Let's see. Am I in less danger of excitement, fear, anger, and worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions? Are you or aren't you? Think about it. And are you more efficient? Do you tire so easily as before when you are burning up energy, foolishly trying to arrange life to suit yourself? All right, finally, after the 11th step, we're on the 12th step. We're in the home stretch here. And this is the final real consideration from the 11th step. Is this all there is? Is there more action? Do I realize that faith without works is dead? So you've gone through all the steps, you've cleared the channels, you're not living in the past with resentment, you're not living in the future with fear. You're starting to get a little peace in your life. Contemplate the word serenity and know peace. You've gotten some promises. You're doing your morning practice. And your morning practice is saying, how can I be a maximum service to others? So now what do you do with it? You're Joe Recovery. What the hell am you doing with it? Well, you show up here is what you do. Let's see. He's got some suggestions. Oh, I sold that guy, see? I wanted to read those to you.
I got one here.
You got one? Yeah. On page 91 of the Big Book Awakening Guide. Thanks, Brian. God will provide. Alright. He's got some suggestions for the 10th, 11th, 12th step practice. Daily, during the day, you practice pausing, asking God for the right thought of action. To continue to take your own inventory as you're interacting in the world. You remember that you're no longer running the show. That's a great consideration. Who's in charge? Who's your manager? Clarence Snyder used to call his higher power God, the manager. I got a new manager. Stay open to what spiritual ideas you can add to this practice. Alright, that's basically it. Yeah, well, we covered it. Thanks, Brian. Alright, thanks. So now you're in step 12, okay? Now, first of all, when I was new and I didn't have much of a spiritual awakening, I had a driver's license. I used to drive drunks to the meetings from a detox. I didn't have a spiritual message, so you can't transmit what you haven't got. That's a line in the Big Book, one of the great lines of the book. You cannot transmit what you haven't got. But I had a driver's license, so I can transmit drunks. I can carry the drunks to the message. I didn't have the message, but I could carry people to the message. So, I mean, if you're wondering about can you get in the service as a newcomer, absolutely. Remember that triangle is equidistant. You know, you can get in all sides of that triangle as quickly as possible. You know what I'm talking about with the triangle, guys?
Yeah.
Yes. Some of you weren't here yesterday. So, you can start doing service right away. You can start getting a home group at your meetings right away. You can start reading how it works or doing whatever. So this is an interesting point, and the book thumpers are a little weird on this. They only consider service to be when you're sitting with a newcomer in front of you taking through the book. Now this is not what Bill Wilson says. This is what a bunch of fanatics say. If Brian knows who they are. And I'm a member, I'm a fellow traveler with them, I would say. But I disagree. I think Bill's right. You can do service. 12-step work versus service in the compulsive overeater's mind. This is a simple religious idea, or spiritual idea, if you don't like religious, and a practical program of action. God's in charge. Who's running the show? What am I going to do today to be... He's my principal. I'm his agent. He's my father. I'm his son. He's the employer. I'm the worker. What am I going to do for the boss today? What am I going to do for the manager? Now, why would I want to constantly work with others? And currently I'm working with three sponsees myself. I'm going through the steps again myself, and I do this kind of service. And I have a home group and all this. Why would I do that? Don't you know who I am? Don't I have better things to do? Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from compulsive overeating as intensive work with other, I'm going to put it in, compulsive overeaters. Okay, now this is the big thing with the book thumpers, and I'll let you draw your own conclusions. I don't turn. In other words, intensive work with compulsive overeaters, is that like, well, I'm the coffee maker at my meeting, or I set up the chairs, or I'm the timer? Is that intensive work with overeaters? See, that's service work, you see. Intensive work with overeaters means I'm sitting with a guy in front of me taking him through the book. I'm transmitting a spiritual message. That's 12-step work. What does the 12 steps say? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. Doesn't even say, having been abstinent 32 years, and I used to weigh 100 pounds more. That's not the message I'm transmitting. It doesn't say that. It says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of the step. I'm trying to carry this message that I've had. What's the message? That I've had a spiritual awakening. Oh yeah, by the way, I haven't had to overeat for 32 years. I'm not obsessed with food anymore. That's pretty powerful. And it gets the attention of the newcomer. You had a question.
So do you recommend sponsoring and getting into this intense work before you've completed all of the steps?
Do I personally?
Yes.
No. I think you should complete them. However, you can transmit what you do have. If you've got good abstinence, staying on your food plan, and good discipline, and you want to food sponsor somebody, that's, yeah. I mean, I can tell a newcomer in AA, just don't drink, go to meetings, even if I haven't had a spiritual awakening. It's good advice. At least he gets his ass in the seat.
Sure.
Now, yeah, well, it's a form of service in a way. But if I'm really doing 12-step work, it's like what Bill said when he saw Ebby. He's not just dry. Something's different here. His roots grasped the new soil. He could sense he was in the presence of an awakened spirit. That's a lot different. Okay? I've had a spiritual awakening. I'm transmitting a spiritual message. So intensive work. Now, the book thumpers are fanatics. If you're not sitting there taking the newcomer through the book, you're not doing 12-step work. Is that what Bill Wilson says? No. Actually, he doesn't. Here's some more considerations. Oh, this is a great line from my buddy Richard W. Oh, what the hell is this? All right, hold on. All right, so practical experience that shows nothing will ensure immunity from compulsive overeating is intensive work with other compulsive readers. It works when all other activities fail. So Richard W. says, why wait till all this fails? Be constantly working with others. Why do you want to wait till all this fails? Always have sponsees. If you've been through the steps and you got something to transmit, why wait till all that's fast? You should be sponsoring people if you've had a spiritual awakening. Do you realize that you can help when no one else can? Okay, you can do it when no doctor, no diet shot doctor, no minister, no preacher, no judge, no family member. Oh, why are you doing this? Why are you killing yourself? That doesn't work. Frothy emotional appeal doesn't work with us. But one compulsive over you talking to another compulsive leader can win the confidence of another compulsive overeater. And hopefully he's got a message that will attract the other compulsive overeater. Here, I put this in. Do you realize you can save someone's life? You know, Frank Brennan used to say that to the newcomers up in San Francisco. They'd be newcomers, terrified. And he said, you're going to be the greeter to this meeting. You're going to stand out here and shake people's hands. Do you know how important that is? And they think, oh, okay, you know, and they shake people's hands, you know. And Frank had a great role with newcomers. But in a way, he was just getting them to feel part of the meeting and to be, you know. But in a way, he was right. Because one compulsive reader can affect another compulsive reader like no doctor or preacher or psychiatrist. You realize it's an experience you must not miss. It's a great thing to be active working with others. You realize you start out as an evangelist or a reformer, you encounter a lot of prejudice and will be handicapped if you arouse it. I did a little of that two-stepping when I was new, you know. AA's the greatest thing in the world. I was total dry drunk, really. Didn't know what the hell I was talking about. I was talking about AA all the time. I'm much more anonymous now. Not because I'm ashamed of being a member of any of these programs, because I don't want to. Sometimes I'm an asshole and I don't want to give the program a bad name. That's what anonymity really ultimately is all about. It's to protect the program. Now, nobody really gives a shit that I'm in a 12-step program, but if I'm acting like an asshole and somebody finds out I'm an OA or AA, you know, they're saying, oh God, they must be a bunch of jerks. So the anonymity is really to protect the program. Do you realize, all right, use I statements, don't preach, you speak for others. That's true. You know, if I say, we did this, we do that, then I'm speaking for you. And if I go, you should do this, you must do this, then I'm preaching to you. And Bill, and we found that out through experience in the book that it doesn't work. You know, do I realize because of my own experience, blah blah blah, I can be uniquely useful? Okay, you can be uniquely useful. If someone does not want to stop compulsive overeating, do I waste time trying to persuade them? Don't waste time, says the book. Find somebody else who's desperate enough to want what you have. Work with them instead, says the book. Page 96. did I ask my prospect? Now, this is important. If you go through the 12-step chapters in the book, which is not just chapter 7, working with others, but it's what I call, if I have time, I'll get to them, the advanced chapters. Some people call them the boring chapters, the lost chapters, to the wives, the family afterward, to the employers, vision for. There's a lot of 12-step advice in those chapters about what, how to approach alkies, the kind of alkies, and it totally applies to the compulsive overeater. You know, because we've got degrees of the disease, it's progressive, there's scales of it, you know, and it gives us advice. If someone does not, do I waste time? You shouldn't waste time. Do I ask my prospect? Now, this is great. Do you want to quit compulsive overeating for good and for all? Now, that's what they used to ask him in the first edition days. They didn't just say, do you want to quit drinking today? They'd find, usually it was the wife calling in because she read some article in Saturday Evening Post or Liberty Magazine or whatever, and saying, my husband, he's dying, can you help him? They said, well, does he want to quit? Yeah, he's been trying to quit. Yeah, okay, well, then you can talk to him. And the book's very specific about approaching a man through the family versus a hospital. It says the hospital's a better vet. And the instructions in working with others are amazingly specific in Chapter 7. It tells you how to talk to them, how to approach them. First thing you do is you tell them your story.
What page?
Joe and Charlie go into this too. They're excellent. Yeah, here we go. When you discover a prospect for Overeaters Anonymous, find out all you can about him. They used to check you out. They'd spy on you. Does this guy really want to quit? How many times has he been in the hospital? They usually talk to the wife, the family members. If he does not want to stop compulsively overeating, don't waste time trying to persuade him. You may spoil a later opportunity. The advice is given to his family also. Clarence and I would say, I never approached the drunk first. I'd always talk to the family first. They'd bring the family into the Oxford groups first, like Ann Smith. You know, they'd bring Henrietta Seabroom. They'd bring the family in first. We don't have to do that now, but because they're coming to us. Things are different in 1939. They come to us. In AA, the court sends them to us. In OA, I guess doctors are... We put out, public information in doctors' offices and shit. We have a health fair. You know, people are coming to us. If there's any indication he wants to stop, that's crucial. Have a good talk with the person most interested in, usually his wife. Get an idea of his behavior, his problem, his back, and he's spying on him. You need this information to put yourself in his place. Let his family or friend ask him if he wants to quit for good. And if he would go to any extreme to do so. First thing I do when I'm working with a new person, I say, are you a real compulsive overeater? I mean, can you quit on your own power? No. Are you hopeless? Yeah. How many diet farms you been on, whatever? Yeah, I had 3 relapses. Then the next question I ask him, are you willing to go to any lengths? And AA, I say, are you a real alcoholic? Tell me a little about your drinking. Are you willing to go to any lengths? Okay. Now it says, tell him, all right, this is on page 91. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. It's telling you how to talk to people. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of your eating, drinking. Tell him enough about your eating habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak himself. Now, we don't remember, this is the days when there weren't a zillion meetings. There wasn't even AA when this was written. So these guys were going back to town's hospitals, going into the courts, going into the nut houses. Bill Van Horn, Dr. Bob Fallon in Maslin State, he used to get drunk and fight with the cops. You know, and his family got so frustrated they had him probated and locked up, you know, and somehow Bob got wind that the guy was really just a drunk in this nut house, and he got his ass out of the nut house. He never took another drink, and he was one of the first Oxford Group members that received Clarence Finder in 1938. There was no AA then. And so they were going back into the nut houses and hospitals and institutions and pitching. And Clarence would say, I don't know about this attraction. We used to sell them, you know. It was a sales project. Tell them enough about your eating habits, senses, experience, courage, and discretion. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. If he's not communicative, give him a sketch of your eating career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. You don't hit him with a spiritual solution first. You sucker him in. You see? If he's in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles food has caused you, being careful not to moralize the lecture. This mood is like telling humorous stories of your escapade. Hey, one time, I'll tell you, man, I was eating frozen food right out of the fridge. I don't know if he finds that humorous. When he sees that you know all about the eating game, commence to describe yourself as a compulsive overeater who's in recovery. Tell him how baffled you are, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles. We don't even have to do this anymore, really. What happens today is, in reality, more God has disclosed more to us. We have meetings, speaker meetings like Serenity Sunday, conferences where there's speakers. I don't know how people are getting wind of us, hospitals, institutions, I don't know. They used to, I saw a TV commercial a long time ago. It was really great. It was this thing about, this. There was this hand in this bowl of chips watching a TV. Did you ever see that one? And it said, you are, I don't know what it said. It sounds like call OA, you know. I mean, it was amazing. Wow, that's a really good commercial, you know. And so whatever it is, people are coming to us. So they hear our stories, you know, and they see, they hear these stories. We show pictures, right, of what we used to be like. When Natalie used to take a picture, and somebody, I forget who it was, used to bring his pants and show off the pants. I forget who the hell it was. Let's see. This business about, do you want to quit for good and for all versus one day at a time? On page 188 of the book is Bill Dodson's story, He Kept the Faith. 8A number 3, the man on the bed, as he's known traditionally. The first drunk. Dr. Bob had about 2 weeks of sobriety when they went to visit Bill. And the first thing you hit him with is, let's turn to page 187. One of the fellows, I think it was Doc, said, well, you want to quit? You want to quit eating? I think it was, I said, yes, Doc, I would like to quit at least for 5, 6, or 8 months until I get things straightened up. This guy was a lawyer. And begin to get the respect of my wife and some other people back and get my finances fixed up and so on. He once was on the city council of Akron. And they both laughed very heartily and said, that's better than you've been doing, isn't it? How's it working for you? How's it going? How's your way working? You managing well? Which, of course, was true. They said, we've got some bad news for you. It was bad news for us, and it will probably be bad news for you. You will never be able to eat sugar again successfully. That's bad news for a lot of people. Okay? Whether you quit 6 days, months, or years, if you go out and take one scoop of ice cream or two, you'll end up in the hospital tied down just like you've been in the past 6 months. You are a compulsive overeater. As far as I knew, that was the first time I'd ever paid any attention to that word. I figured I was just a drunk. Well, we're back to 80 now. And they said, no, you have a disease. And it doesn't make any difference how long you do without it. After a drink or two, you end up just like you are now. That certainly was real disheartening news at the time. The next question they asked me was, you can quit 24 hours, can't you? I said, sure, yes, anybody can do that for 24 hours. They said, that's what we're talking about, just 24 hours at a time. That's sure to take a load off my mind. Every time I'd start thinking about drinking, I would think of the long, dry years ahead. So you tell a newcomer, all right, look, from what you told me, you're allergic to sugar. You've got to get this off your food plan. You know, or you're a bread eater. So I don't think it's a good idea to start your breakfast with 2 bagels. Why don't you try like 2 soft-boiled eggs, you know, whatever. I mean, it's between you and him and the food sponsor. And this. But you start them But you do want to say, according to the book, you said you want to quit compulsively overeating for good and for all. You know, it's like me, it's up 80 pounds, down 80 pounds, up 80 pounds, down 80 pounds, up 80 pounds. Yeah, I mean, you know, pregnant hormones, Stillman diet, liquid protein, you know. You sick of this? Do you want to quit compulsively eating for good and for all? Yeah. Okay. Well, you got to get sugar off your food plan. For the rest of my life, my sister's wedding's next week, they're going to have a wedding cake. Just for today. Then your drop back position is the 24-hour day plan. Well, can you just not eat sugar today? God is in the now, always. You get him in the now. You know. But the guys who used to qualify him, who wrote this book, it was none of this. First they asked him, do you want to quit drinking for good and for all? You know, they give him right out. And if you don't mean business, we don't waste time with you. Okay, I told you about Clarence Snyder's, when Bob said, we don't know about you, young fella. I am worked for 7 years. He's been homeless for 3 years. He's, you know, he had no clothes left. He hopped them all. He's down from 180 to 135 pounds. He's drinking denatured alcohol, 8 cents a pint. He's living in abandoned houses with a bunch of drunks. And his wife won't let him back in the house. And Dr. Bob says, we don't know if you're ready yet. I mean, this is, you know, see, that's why they had such good success rates in the old days, though. They kind of weeded out the weak sisters. But now they're coming to us. Okay? They're coming to us. But you still want to qualify them. If you heard my story, you know, if somebody comes up to you because you're talking in a meeting, they come up to you, do you think you can help me? Well, you heard my story. Yeah. Can you identify? And then you get him to tell a little bit about his eating. Yeah, and then I was in the fat farm, and then I went to the fat camp, and then I went on the shock doctor. I said, well, you want to quit eating? Compulsive overeating for good and for all. Yeah. Okay, well then, today you're going to tell me what you're going to eat today. And then you just start them on the 24-hour day plan if you have. The only thing I want to say generally about Chapter 7 is read it carefully, you see how specific the directions are. That's what blows my mind about Chapter 7. They tell you how to talk to them, how to approach them, they're telling you how to converse with them. I mean, the directions are amazingly specific in working for others. In general, this is a great passage. On page 95, never talk down to a compulsive overeater from any moral or spiritual hilltop. I'm going to put that in there. Because this works with anybody. From any moral spiritual hilltop, simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for his inspection, his or her. Show him how they work for you. You tell him your story first. First thing you do when you talk to a newcomer, you tell him your story. Now, what's going on today, see, in the old days, they'd go to the hospital, the guy's on the bed, he's just coming out of paraldehyde coma. He's waking up. What's going on here? Why am I in a private room? We want to talk to you. Then they tell him the story. He'd tell a little of his story. Nowadays, we speak at meetings. The newcomer's in the meetings. He hears us, and he's interested. Okay? So he's already got a little bit of your story, and he's hearing the G word for the first time. He's starting to, oh shit, what is this, a bunch of cult, it's a holy rollers. So you don't hit him with the white light. You know, you hit him with, offer him friendship and fellowship. Tell him if he wants to get well, you'll do anything to help. If he's not interested in your solution, now, the book says you stress the spiritual solution freely. So I don't hesitate to use the G word or talk about my higher power or emphasize that this is a spiritual program. It's not group therapy. It's not about garbage dumping. It's not a coffee clutch. It's certainly not a diet and calories club. And that will turn some people off. That's why they have these we agnostic things. But the book says, and I think I previously... Where does it say stress the spirit? I don't know. Maybe I didn't. I know I had it in there. It says stress the spiritual aspect freely. If he's not interested in your solution, he expects you to act only as a banker. Well, you know. We don't put our work, really, our 12-step work, we don't do on a service plane, you know. Sure, we'll give somebody a ride to the meeting or help them out. Or, I mean, that's fellowship, that's service, that's wonderful. But my real 12-step work is on a spiritual level, not a service plane. And especially in AA, we got people coming in homeless, they're on the street, they need money to eat today, you know. We'll do that occasionally, you know. But if he starts to think of Alcoholics Anonymous as like the Salvation Army or the, you know, where they feed the homeless in Santa Monica on the Ocean Avenue there, you know, every Thursday they know they can show up there for breakfast. And if he starts to think of the program like that, he's getting the wrong message. Sure, we help other people out in the fellowship. Absolutely. You do it without thinking. It becomes a part of you after a while. It's no big deal. Somebody needs a ride to a meeting or, you know, even if... But that's not the real solution I'm offering. Okay? We're talking about... I got to find this because it's so crucial. I know I put it in there somewhere. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll read it again. That's on page 93. Tell them exactly what happened to you. And it's italicized, which means emphasize. Stress the spiritual feature freely. Don't be ashamed to talk about a higher power of God, as you understand it. And if you're an abstinent agnostic, say, you know, I still have a lot of doubts about this stuff, but I'm abstinent today, and I just like what's going on here, and I'm still doing it. You can stress that if that's your truth. I'm not telling you to pretend to believe in God if you don't. You'd stress what happened to you. If this man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your perception of God. If you say, well, I'm still using the meetings as my higher power, well, that's your higher power at this point. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. Somebody says, well, my higher power is a light bulb. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to a light bulb. That doesn't make sense to me. Now, if it makes sense to you, Mazel Tov, what can I tell you? It makes no sense to me. But the important thing is it's got to make sense to you. And if you'd say, well, there's power in these meetings, I identify, that's what's working. That's the only higher power I can see at this point. That's what makes sense to him or her at this point. I go with it. I have no problems working with agnostics or atheists, as long as they're open and willing. See, the willingness in the chapter of the agnostic, the openness, willingness, honesty, and openness. They make it how, but it's actually in the book. It's W. It's who. Willingness, honesty, and openness are indispensable, it says. Okay, as long as their mind is totally not shut to spiritual concepts. The main thing, italicized, page 93, is that he be willing to believe in a power, or he or she, greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. Are you willing to live by spiritual principles? What does that mean? It means, tell me what you're going to eat today. That's how it starts. I mean, we start at a very, very basic level. That's why, some of these slogans they're good, but they're misleading. You know, just don't pick up the first compulsive bite today. You can tell a newcomer that, absolutely. That's a very spiritual act, by the way, when you're new. Do you know how spiritual it is for these guys to put down a drink? It usually meant about 3 days of DTs and possible convulsion. That's why they would hospitalize them. Most of the people who wrote the book were hospitalized before they ever went to anything like a meeting. Because that's you know what a spiritual act is? And for a compulsive overeater who's been binging, stuffing himself, as I was 32 years ago, to say, okay, I just want to get through breakfast today. Absolutely. Now, some of you have heard my story, the long form. You know, it really started in the now. It was in Paris. Just let me get through breakfast today without binging. And I take the bread off the table, give me soft-boiled eggs, put milk in the coffee, you know, fuck Gracie. Oh, I'm not bad at that. But, you know, I mean, that's how it started for me. I didn't get a chance to go into my story today because I didn't want to waste time in a book workshop with my personal story. Do I realize it's better? All right, so all these realizations. Now, there it is, the main thing. It's not a dying coward's club. It's a spiritual program. Oh, this is one of the greatest lines in the book. Do I realize that the more hopeless the prospect is, the better? It's on page 94. I get the biggest kick out of that. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of compulsive overeating. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. Okay, isn't that great? The more hopeless you are, good. I can't stop eating. It's killing me. I'm going to kill myself. Good. Welcome. You're in the right place, you know. The more hopeless, the better. That's why Harlan's story is so great. He went to what I call first edition level. I identify an AA as a first edition level alcoholic. I was hospitalized by AA people. The book appealed to me. I had a spiritual experience in my first meeting. I was absolutely unable to stop drinking. I woke up every day with the shakes for a year saying, today I'm not going to drink. I was drunk before the end of the day. The book says, few to whom this volume will appeal can stay sober for any considerable period of time. Most will be drunk within a few weeks. I was drunk within a few hours. First edition level alcoholism. The guys who wrote this book were not in denial. They were so far they were going to Dr. Jung to figure out how to quit. That's not denial. They were desperate to quit. They were getting detoxed. They were trying to quit. They were going to Oxford group meetings. They were going to, Christian Science meetings. They were desperate, desperate, desperate. They're not in denial. They were baffled. That's a first edition term. They're baffled. They couldn't stop. No power in them whatsoever. All right, I guess I'm going to have to quit soon. Anyway, Bill says you can. Now, Bill disagrees with the book thumpers. He says, and this is a good thing for you guys to read. Keep an open mind. Don't let me read your book for you. Don't let me put thoughts in your head. You take this. Bill says in the 12 and 12, page 110, the AA 12 and 12. There are many opportunities, even for those of us who feel unable to speak at meetings or who are so situated we cannot do much face-to-face 12-step work. So much for the book thumpers. We can be the ones to take on the unspectacular but important task to make good 12-step work possible. Okay? Perhaps arranging for the coffee and cake after the meetings where so many skeptical, suspicious newcomers have found confidence and comfort in the laughter and talk. Okay? This is 12-step work in the very best sense of the word. Freely ye have received, freely give. It is the core of this part of the 12-step. So Bill doesn't agree that the only kind of 12-step work you can do is take the guy through the book. Bill says some people just aren't into it. I don't know, whatever. You want to do set up the chairs, you want to be the timer, you want to be the treasurer. Anything you do to help another compulsive overeater is the beginning of getting out of yourself, out of the food into the people. The essence of the disease is not food, that's a symptom. The essence of the disease is bondage of self. It's all about me, self-centeredness. That we must get rid of or it kills us, says the book. And the minute you start doing something for somebody else, you're starting on a spiritual path. And a lot of groups like the Pacific Group, they don't take them through the book like we do. They just start, all right, take a commitment. Help them move. It's just getting out of yourself through any way you can. Food sponsor versus step sponsor. If you haven't had a spiritual awakening, at least you're absent. You can be a food sponsor. Work with others. According to the book thumpers, it's only doing this, taking them through the book. According to Bill, I just read, it's all kinds of service. You make up your own minds. Don't let me read your book for you. They have their opinions. I like this. It's an aid. It's one, Dan S. Here's the book. Read it. Study it. It's a textbook. Do the best you can with the steps. Nobody's a saint. Nobody's done it perfectly. I screwed up so many amends, I don't even want to tell you about it. I have to make amends for amends that I screwed up. I don't even have time to go into the advanced chapters, but I love the advanced chapters. They're great. There's so much good stuff in there that I can't even believe it, including the famous line, I'm a miracle. We who have recovered from serious eating disorders are miracles of mental health. And I always say that when I speak, and people go, what the hell is he talking about? Page 133 of the big book. Everything I say is based on the book. I gave you some references, and here I have a list, and I will, if you email me, at roysloveryan.net, I will email you this file, and at the back of it I have the list of the best speakers, workshop leaders, book studies. They're all on the internet for fun and for free. most of them anyway. And Chris Raymer, Chris Schroeder, Doug Muir, Scott Lee, Bob Dow. Then there's the Pioneers. I listen to all the old tapes. I don't want some guru telling me what the book means. I'm going to listen to a guy who was involved in writing the book tell me what he meant. And that's the way, that's my approach to this thing. I listen to all the old tapes, the guys. And that's it, man. I got to, huh?
Just say your email
address really clearly. Say my email address really clearly. How about if I put it on the screen really clearly? Right?
For the tape.
For what tape? For this? Yeah, that's what I'm going to do right now. Can you read this? Hold on. Calm down. I am a computer, very computer literate guy. Okay, I'm a new age kind of guy here.
Oh,
right?
You got to 32.
32? Oh, can you read that? Verizon.net. ROYSLED.net. So if you email me, I'll attach this file in Microsoft Word format. It's got everything, page references, the quotes. At the end, it's got my list of recommended speakers. Just my taste, my opinions. Take what you want, leave the rest. And so, thanks for having me here.
Thank
and you.
You
guys can go have your closing speaking.
Thank you. Do you have any more of these?
Yes, I have. I got a box of the Dan. Brian, you better get your thing back before they snatch it out from under you. I have a box of these in the car. I do not make any money in.
Are you
going to
be upstairs closing speaker?
Well, first I got to get this box out of the car. No, I'm not. I don't know. I have to see what the hell.
Excuse me, just one question.
Okay.
Did you see a part of equipment in here with OA information on it?
A cart?
It looks like a cart, like rented.
No,
it has like the OA marathon.
Oh no, I did not.
Just
right.
What did you mean when you said meetings at the